Good evening and welcome to the Could Have Been Champions, your Could Have Been Champions on Sunday evening on ABC Local Radio and streaming around the world on the World Wide Web. Hello, Greg Champion.
Yes, good evening. We are yours and I am yours and hello to yous.
And welcome to you. Hello, Jeff Richardson.
Hello, Billy Baxter. Hello there listening. And Greg, I am the walrus.
I thought Paul was the walrus. Hello, Ian Cover.
Hello there, Billy Baxter. Hello, colleagues. Hello, Australia.
Good to have you here.
And the world, for that matter.
Yes, the whole wide world. Oh. We do have a lot of listeners overseas. If you'd like to call us throughout the evening, feel free. Please do. It would be great to have your company on the Odie Cologne.
Yes, wherever you are internationally, tonight especially, we would love to hear where you are, what you're doing. Are you Australian? Are you non-Australian?
And are you un-Australian?
What are you wearing? What did you have for tea? We just like company. That's us.
Are you barracking for India or Australia in the cricket?
The international number is, gentlemen, 0061 300 800 222. That's 0061 300 800 222. Or you can email us with your telephone number and we'll call you back at our expense. That's all right.
And the email address is?
I'm getting to that, Ian.
Good.
abc.net.au/could-have-beens. Could have been spelt C-O-O-D-A-B-E-E-N-S.
I don't think we've had a lot of calls from the States lately. I mean, Europe's been going well for us. Japan, yes, nice market for us. Asia, yes, fair, steady. But Canada, not bad. But, you know, I'd like a few more calls from the United States if you're tuned in.
I would love some. I'd put an order in for some white T-shirts and some blue jeans from our correspondent in the United States of America. I've been there twice and I bought some, but they haven't lasted the journey.
Although you can get a lot of mileage out of a white T-shirt and a pair of jeans.
Very much so.
Like decades, if you put your mind to it.
Yes, well, I think they span nearly a decade.
Yeah, well, good.
I make my things last.
On that subject, making things last, I'm just going to play the housewife role for a moment, if I may.
Don't tell me you're still using that old plastic shop washing basket.
And I'm still washing it in softly as well.
That same basket that you used to hang the washing out that you said you were never going to get rid of, are you still using it from 20 years ago?
Actually,
the red plastic one?
No.
What happened to it?
Don't recall. It's been a while. But I want to ask you this. Talking about making T-shirts last, I personally have decided a long time ago that nearly everything I wear, because I do the washing, I'm the minister for washing at our house, it goes delicate. I don't go standard wash. Everything goes delicate because it doesn't get dirty.
I wouldn't know the difference.
Oh, well, I think the difference is how long your clothes last.
Oh. I just chuck them in the machine.
I see what you're saying.
Press go.
So it's not so much a matter of you use less water on a delicate cycle and you're being a good guy globally that way.
Nah.
You're making your clothes last.
Yeah, just a delicate wash just keeps them looking newer longer.
Oh, so they don't get violently thrown about by the agitator in the bottom of the machine.
Can I put this to you, Jeff?
Put it to me.
All right, I'll put this to you. When you wear a garment, say you're wearing a long sleeve T-shirt and a pair of white
chinos
pants.
No, painter's pants.
You wear
painter's
them for,
pants, are they?
You may wear them for a day. You may wear them for 2 days. You might even wear them for three. Who knows? You might wear them 4 or 5 days. I'm not going to ask. But when they go in the wash, they're not soiled. So really, all we're really doing, this is my little pet theory, is we're tightening the cotton up so they look new again, fresh again.
Okay, so you don't feel the washing at that point is for removing germs, stains and other unwanted
We're just making them look fresh again to put on.
It's a freshening up process.
Would you remind me never to go to your dry cleaning business, Champs' dry cleaner? I think I'll give you a berth, a wide one.
We don't clean your clothes. We just create the illusion.
So, we just tighten the weave.
What we do, Jeff, is we want to get them wet and we want to get them dry again. They look fresh and basically they are washed.
Well, why get them wet and then dry again? Because they're already dry. Why don't you just shake them out?
Because the wetness is what tightens the fabric up, you know, makes them look fresher again.
Well, why don't you just put them between the pages of a heavy book?
When I get
and put an anvil on the top.
When I get a garment I really like a snappy shirt or even my
We're yet to see you in that.
Then it doesn't even get the delicate wash. It just gets a soak.
Crazy, oh, man. Crazy.
The hand wash. Ian Cover has a better theory on this. It's terrible to make comparisons. I won't say better. Ian has an alternative on this.
Get the girl in.
No. He advocates it, and I've tried to follow it, but at the time you always forget. But I always think Covey's rule as I'm walking out of the shop, and I think I forgot Covey's rule. Mm. When you find, what was it you described before, the garment you particularly like? Was that your turn of phrase?
Might have been.
Covey always advocates get two of them.
Oh, that one, yeah. The two, and I did get two.
Put one away for future use.
No, exactly. Yeah, well, actually, on the rack at the time, and they were at the shop with a body of water flowing to the sea, which Ian, off-air recently, put down. Well, no, it's not as indicated, was not as classy as some of the establishments.
The Johnny store.
He prefers to shop at, yes. But...
Hang on. So what's wrong with the watercourse clothing?
Well, I thought it suited me, but it's not. Ian prefers to look a bit snappier than that.
So you can go a couple of racks.
Apparently.
Above.
Not
water,
that I
water
knew.
Yeah.
So there was a very nice-looking long-sleeve T-shirt. I thought and quite a thick weave. So
imagine how much thicker it would be after you've lightly wetted it and then dried it again.
Well, only when you have to, Jeff. And so there were two on the rack, but one was large and one was extra large. So I got them both because I'm sort of somewhere in between. Mm. But I wear the two at once, so I didn't put one away, Ian. Mm. They're both getting in circulation. But they just go for a soak. They don't even get the delicate wash because they get soiled, just a bit of it. Leave them in there for an hour or two and then spin them.
What about your smelly old athletics gear then? What do you do with that? Delicate wash too or Fred Ingram wash?
But again, it doesn't get much... Too much action at the track.
How about your undies?
I hate to think.
No, my business. Delicate.
You've just been sharing your business with us.
Well, they don't get very soiled. How about yours?
Champs told me last night that it took him half an hour to take his underpants off the night before.
How come?
Well, he tried to take them off over his head.
Thank you.
Well, I've never paid attention to lights and coloureds, delegates and all of that, but after hearing your advocacy of it, Champs, I am going to, and clearly there'll be a setting... called super heavy, and I'm choosing it from now on.
Well, sometimes certainly you can see a towel that where people don't use fabric softener, you can see a towel.
See, you don't need it. You want a towel to be crisp and crunchy. Yeah. You've dried it in the sun, and it's all abrasive, and it gives you a vigorous rub.
Exactly. How unmanly of you, Greg. Billy, you don't want a towel that's been softened with fabric softener, do you?
I don't want to dry myself with some velour.
You want a bit of a towel that's got a bit of abrasion about it.
Correct. And do a bit of exfoliating while I'm drying.
No, on the contrary, gentlemen. It lasts longer.
What does?
A towel using fabric softener.
Yeah, so you've got a towel and you've washed in the fabric softener. Mm. And so to make the towel last longer, you just look at the towel and stand there until you dry.
Mm. He's the garment in Manchester industry's worst enemy, this bloke. He's got clothes and towels from the Ark.
Make the towels so soft they don't dry you. I'm with Billy on that.
Yeah, it needs to be absorbent. And if it's too soft, they just glide over your skin.
On the contrary, the fabric softened towel has the loops are standing up nice and better, and so they actually are more absorbent.
It's been fabric softened, do you just give it a quick whiz in the dryer just to give it that really nice fluffy feel on you?
My theory is, Jeff, that whilst they might be delicately washed, spin them at any temperature. It's not going to wear them out any faster.
I'm surprised you use a clothes dryer.
No, I don't. Just the washing machine.
Oh, you mean the spin dryer in the washing bucket.
Mm-hmm. Don't go to the dryer. Don't need to go to the dryer.
You're a mysterious fellow, champion.
Yeah, I mean, I'm thinking of trying, I'm imagining, I've just had a shower and I'm trying to dry myself with one of Champs' towels, and it makes me feel uncomfortable just sitting here.
Mm. Can I...
I feel sort of a bit icky.
And wet.
Damp.
Yeah, don't worry about that.
I'll take you to just another place with this discussion.
Mm. Please do.
I was listening to a guest speaker at a function. She had been in Asia mixing with women of a Central Asian country. Mm. I forget whether she'd been in Nepal or India or one of the those countries. She had been spending a few weeks with the local women, and the local women had brightly coloured clothes, But she noticed in spending several weeks with them that they didn't ever get washed. And she asked, and she recounted this story to us, where she asked the women, how is it that you do not ever wash your clothes? And they just looked at her blankly and said, they would wear out. So they believed that washing them would only deteriorate them, and they only had one set of clothes.
But what happens if you're chowing down on a pie, mm-hmm. and you've got the pie innards and the sauce on you?
Then you better give it a rinse.
Just a light sponge.
Have it a soak, and if you've got an alternative.
But wouldn't you know, it being dirty eventually break down the fabric anyway?
And yeah, good theory. Mm. Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah. Mm. Anyway. But that's what she said.
Oh.
Now, look what I've agreed with someone instead of arguing. So I've spoilt the whole thing.
Yeah. You haven't decided to adopt that policy, have you?
No, I'm still going for the... still washing them, mm-hmm. as opposed to not washing at all. Mm-hmm. Mm. So just try it. Well, if you've got something you really like, it lasts longer. Simple as that.
Mm. Do the woolens on a delicate cycle. That's about as far as I'll go.
Well, depends how much you like it. If it's a good woolly, just soak it.
But then I put it on sopping wet. God.
Now, you mentioned some of this has to do with we were discussing the clothing you might soil when you're involved in Masters Athletics. Have you been Master Athleticing this weekend?
Yesterday was the first meet. It was the launch of the new track.
Could you say meeting? I don't know, not with...
No, not into meat?
No.
Oh. Meat's what you put on a Barbie and you don't even go there.
Or you get it on a tray in a raffle.
Okay. Mm. Yes. Ian, yesterday they launched the new track, the replaced track.
Synthetic?
Well, all that rubbery stuff.
Okay.
But is it a new high-tech version of it?
Well, you'd think so, but to look at it...
Kevlar?
It looks the same as the one that was there before.
Did it feel different?
No. And I've been on three replaced tracks, or the three tracks in my region, they've all been replaced in the last 4 years.
That's because you keep on soiling them. You refuse to wash them properly.
They ran a warm-up meet, and they had three events only, 100, 200 and long jump. Oh, and they told me later in the afternoon they're having a 3K. So I had a little 100, and I had a little long jump, and it was the first long jump for the season, 6 months since the last summer. And I did three jumps. They were very poor jumps.
Mm.
And the body really felt it. Whilst one has been sprinting all summer, winter, and forgive us, listeners, for just running off on this athletics track, when you try and jump 4 metres, and I'm only falling over 4 metres, lost half a metre.
It's the track.
It hurts.
It's the difference between a new ball and an old ball.
You land in that sand in, I'll be fair dinkum with you, and you go, that shouldn't feel bad. That shouldn't hurt that much.
Mm. Is it real sand or has it come from CSIRO?
I think they had genuine Fairdingham long jump sand. Mm. So after three, I scratched and walked away.
Walked off.
Oh, well, I knew I was going to be...
A quitter never wins and a winner never quits.
This was without being red carded or anything. You just took your own leave.
I knew that if I did six jumps, I wouldn't be able to walk last night.
Oh. Was there controversy around the stadium that, hello, good champion? He's passed. He's walked off.
He's leaving the track. Look, he's packing his bag.
He is going.
Yeah.
Well, this is extraordinary.
No one would have known.
Oh, dear.
So anyway, had a long jump, had 100, and the season's open. It's open season. And today was registration day.
Right. So what will this mean if you've got a program mapped out, which will culminate at the Australian Masters Games in Geelong next February? Is that the idea?
Yeah. I better start getting the body used to long jumping again. That's what it means. That's the message I got.
You've got time?
Until February, the pressure's on, and there's some work to do.
Will you be peaking by February? Is that the idea in the program you've mapped out in your head?
We could put some counters on the wall now. 5.13 was the PB once.
Mm-hmm.
4.91 won the States 18 months ago.
Yep.
This year, I crashed to 4.3, lost half 0.6 per metre.
Mm.
So we're looking to get back in the high fours. I don't know if we'll ever see the fives again.
Mm. Mm.
So high fours should win.
In your category?
Yeah.
Well, I think you should include and introduce some iron-based food in your training diet.
Yeah, but a steak or two.
Yeah, that's what I'm getting at.
Give you a bit of a boost.
good thinking. It's only been 32 years. Now's the time. I'm with you. Mm. I'm switching over.
No, well, can you keep us posted, champion, on how it's progressing?
We need to. First of all, we need to get past 4.3.
Don't injure yourself. That'll retard your progress.
Yeah, that's good.
Luckily, that hasn't happened.
I've had to go to an ankle support this week.
Yes.
Hello.
So you're training for the 1500.
Yes.
How's it going?
I'm coming from a long way back.
He's gone for an ankle support. That's how well it's going.
And now I've got a bad knee.
Oh.
Ouch.
Mm.
Now, these are... Mm.
Nothing is swelling, though, so I'm not overly concerned.
So you're not thinking of switching events? Or
well, I was thinking of going from 1500 to maybe the 3000.
Is lawn bowls just...
Putting more pressure on yourself.
Well, I can... The need for speed isn't there, because generally in 1500 I go out hard early and just stay that way.
At the 3, you just keep on keeping on.
Mm.
Well, like Ian suggested, if the track just becomes prohibitive, 10-pin bowling is always another option.
Is that in it?
I think it would be 10-pin bowling. There's 72 sports.
Yeah, it'll be there.
What are you doing, Cove? You're sailing, aren't you?
No, I was going to get a cricket team together.
Okay.
But
are we invited?
How's that going?
Well, you'll be... Well, I've got some time to work on it now. Other things have been cleared. But, a few people have indicated their interest in participating.
Hmm.
Well, do you want to play cricket and do long jump?
No, I want to be invited, and then I want to knock you back.
Righto.
So you got Rodney Hogg, have you?
Hoggy, I've put it to him. He's considering it.
As Sod?
No, I think he's too busy with the horses. But Mervyn Hughes, I've put it to him. Young Andy has thrust his name in front of the selectors.
I bet he can play a bit.
But I don't think he'll be able to play.
It's the Masters games, isn't it?
Oh.
Not as in Master Andrew Bellairs.
Yeah. He'd be forbidden to play because he's too young.
23-year-olds.
Well, what if we sort of, you know...
Not allowed.
Put a bit of flour through his hair and...
I think they do...
We could trick him up.
I'll find out about
this. Make him look old.
But I think they do a thing with the cricket... Masters games where they add up the ages of the team and average it out or something.
That's clever.
He would pull our average down. That's the only concern.
But there must be some sort of floor on the age below which you're not allowed to play.
Well, across the board for the Masters games, these particular ones, it's 30 plus.
Mm.
Andy? No.
30 plus, you get some fairly decent cricketers playing who are just that side of 30. Don't worry about that.
Well, at the last one in Adelaide 2 years ago, Darren Lehman played, I believe.
Didn't see the cricket, the Masters, but it's you know, people are still world champs in their 30s, aren't they?
Well, half the Australian cricket team are currently playing their trade in Bangalore.
Hmm.
May you have a mixed team, gender-wise?
Not sure. I haven't checked that. Suppose you could.
We need to look into all these.
So anyway, it's under consideration. Yes, and
that only leaves you, Jeffy.
Leave me what?
Oh, you were going to do the swimming, weren't you?
Yeah.
How are you going with your training?
Oh, just slowly building up.
Ankle brace?
No braces required. I just want to get the water wings. Just want to get the K's into the
snorkel.
Legs. Not using any A's. Not on the flippers as yet.
Mm-hmm.
Diving belt.
Just going up and down. haven't tried for speed
rubber
at
ducking.
All yet.
Floaties.
Swing between the flags, I trust.
PT76.
So, all roads lead to Geelong in
February.
We're very excited.
And the Could Have Been Champions, to whom you're listening on ABC Local Radio, we're ambassadors for it. So that's what that's part. But even if we weren't, we'd be taking particular interest in Greg Champion's involvement because he's the genuine article.
He has meddled in the past.
Mm.
Mm.
With the use of the word "medal" as a verb,
yes, go to the other room, Bill.
Yeah.
Mm.
So that's all ahead of us.
Just being mischievous.
So if you want to participate and you're listening to the Could Have Beens Overseas on ABC Local Radio, put in your diary for February. I think 22 to 28, something like that.
February 20 to March 1.
Sooner than you think.
Glad you're here to iron that out for James. He might have missed his event.
Yeah. The track program, I think, Billy, from memory.
Track program.
Well, that's right. The opening ceremony will be on the 20th.
Champs.
Events on the 27th.
I'm going to put a challenge to you right now.
Yeah.
Here we go.
We have hinted at this in discussions we've had over the past couple of months.
Mm.
I want you to have a go on our behalf. And so that we can get the fun of watching you do it and we can cheer you on and support you, I want you to have a go at the pole vault.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, would you be our Rube?
Would you have a crack at the pole vault?
No, I don't reckon I would. Because I think pole vault might involve a certain amount of upper body strength to make that pole bend.
I don't think you can just take it up like that. I think it takes years of
consideration.
And but practice.
If you can think of everything you had to do, you were telling us about your long jump before, you had to run really fast and then jump through the air and then endure the pain and humiliation of falling in the sand.
Well,
it can't be that different.
Yeah.
Because you have to develop your lower lumbar.
You run along holding a pole. Yeah. And then you fall on a whole lot of hessian and boxes and things.
No, I'll make you a counter offer, Jeff. I'm going to give you six events, 5 to 7 events, and I'm going to do those. And out of those 5 or 7, hopefully you can get something from witnessing those. Mm-hmm. But pole vault won't be one of them. So there'll be 2 hurdle events, 3 jumping events, and maybe a little bit of sprint as well.
All right. I give up.
That's my last offer.
No, that's right. Good.
I give
I'm
up.
Happy with
I just
that.
Thought I might, you know.
That's more than I'll be involving myself in, so I dips me lid.
Yeah. Haven't gone a throw. I've never thrown a thing. Not instant throwing. There are
not even a spear? I mean, the big metal ball and all those other ones.
The discus.
They don't. It's hard to get excited over those, but once you get that spear in your hand, you really want to throw it.
Out at the club, which is the Masters Club, there are folks who pick up and do the javelin quite well and easily. So that would be the one you'd go to first.
Yeah.
After all, you need to be pretty chunky for a shot putter, and discus, they're not so chunky.
Mm. And then there's the probably the least looked at of all of them, the hammer. Yeah.
They're pretty chunky.
Mm.
So chunky is not my
great event, Hammer.
Strong suit.
We must say good evening, or more so good morning, to Ian, Maria, Chloe and Henry. I'm guessing Henry's a young fella.
Mm-hmm.
Good on you, Ian and Maria, for trotting out Henry, a good old traditional solid name. You're listening to us with your kids in their PJs over breakfast in the Netherlands, Vegemite toast and Weet-Bix all over the floor, as per usual, traditional Dutch breakfast, of course. So good to have you on board. And hello, kids. Make sure you clean up that mess on the floor for Mum and Dad.
And Ian and Maria, we hope we'll be seeing you at the Geelong Masters in February. Book your flights now.
One sport that won't be there, that I did hear about this afternoon on Grandstand on ABC local radio, is the sport of snowboarding, where Walshy was interviewing a chap who'd been over there witnessing an event in the Netherlands, where an Australian had come fifth in a snowboarding event.
I wouldn't have thought there would have been a hill high enough in all of Holland for you to be able to snowboard.
I think it may well have been indoors, and I think it may well have been involving tricks. And funnily enough, I saw a bit of this on television today, as luck would have it, and it's... You know, we just don't get out and about to see these sort of things that are happening in the... There'll be 72 sports in Geelong and there won't be snowboarding. And they do tricks where they've just got the snowboard on the feet and it's basically like doing skateboarding without the wheels. So it'll be... There'll be a little tiny snow, hump or bump to go up over, do a flip or whatever.
Oh, so it's a bit like the half pipe.
Yeah, sometimes have a half pipe and... They were showing one I saw on the telly, and this may well have been part of the challenge in the Netherlands, where it's just a set of stairs with a metal handrail down the middle, and they ride the snowboard...
Down the stairs?
No, on the handrail.
On the handrail. Mm.
Yeah, and you get points for it. You land on the snow at the bottom of the steps and then go up and do it again.
Goodness.
I don't think you'll be doing that one, champion. Well... And ankle boy over here won't be going... Mind you, you could strap the snowboard on, and they have good support for your ankle because it's got the boots attached.
So when you get to the bottom, do you have to take it off to go back up the top? Because you're strapped in the snowboard, or do you just kick them off?
Kick them off and go up and slap them back on again. And they were showing some stuff happening, I think, in New Zealand, where there's been a snow park, it's called, built out on the slope. So this is an outdoor bit with all the lumps and bumps and half pipes. And while people are going along doing these jumps and twists and turns and things off them, there's also some galoot going along in a car on the snow, doing all sorts of radical driving. And
earning points for this?
Well, surely it's under controlled conditions, because there were people on the snowboards going up on a, snow sort of slope, rampy thing, taking off, landing on the roof of the car and then hopping off the car back onto the snow.
Magnificent. That place in the Netherlands is the Snow World Landgraf.
Oh, yes. And there's an indoor facility, Billy?
Indoor facility, yes. Yeah. Indoor freestyle snowboard facility. Mm-hmm.
So you ought to look up Snow Park as well in New Zealand and see that, because there were people landing on bonnets of this car. And I'm thinking, this is, what if they actually missed time? They get cleaned up by the car.
Oh, so the car was driving along while they landed on it.
Yeah, this is what was...
It's like something you'd see at a circus.
Well, it looked like stunts out of a movie.
Mm. Grant Page behind the wheel.
So, there you go.
Built tough for icy conditions.
Oh, it was indeed, the one I saw.
What about, now, I thought it was called parasailing, but it's got a new name now, parasailing.
Oh, has it?
Yes.
Yes, because just like champagne and things of that nature, it's a region and you can't use the French region, so you can't have Paris sailing anymore.
Is that the one where you're towed along by a boat and you go up holding onto a kite?
You don't have to be towed by a boat. I think you just really have to probably stand on the shore, get your parachute up, and away you go. You don't have to start with a boat.
No, the parasailing.
Oh, the parasail. I beg your pardon. Mm. Parasailing, you do go up in the air, and I've done that at Keppel Island.
Behind a boat.
Is that where a boat's towing you along?
Yeah, so that is parasailing.
Scary?
No.
Is that in the Masters Games? It's another one that's missed out.
Well, that's what I was going to ask. Yeah. Not parasailing, but the other one where you stand on the shore, put your parachute up, and take off. That's not.
Paragliding. It's paragliding. A variation on the hang gliding. Yeah.
With paragliding.
You start on a high up place and you jump off.
Yeah. Oh, well, you could start on the shore.
Can you?
Yeah, they stand on the sand.
How do you get down
the wind? The wind would have to be pretty strong.
You get your parachute up. Once the parachute's up, it pulls you into the water.
Oh, so it's as easy as that. You get your parachute up.
Yeah. So that's the key to it.
The wind, I'm thinking the wind must be pretty strong. It
has to be going the right way.
I've seen people trying, is what you're talking about, but they also have a surfboard at their feet.
Yeah, is this a variation on windsurfing, or is it like water skiing with a parachute?
It's kite surfing a bit, isn't it, rather than
kite surfing. That's what they're calling it now, kite surfing.
Perhaps. I can't be sure.
But I did hear a new term for it, and I think kite was involved.
Jeffy, you touched prior to the news on the fact that they're running the motor race this weekend.
The King of the Mountain will have been decided.
Correct. And our highly valued yet infrequent contributor, the Kudabeans, Imre Selezinski, is, the Prince of the Mountain anyway. Hello, Imre.
How are you, boys?
Good.
Yeah, good. Well. Hello there.
I'm well. Look, I'm speaking to you from the politically incorrectly named Lithgow Workingmen's Club. I don't know what the working women here do, but I've just had the fantastic rump steak, and my little boy's gone the schnitzel and chips, and I'm staring down on what I was about to describe to you as the beautifully manicured bowling, would it be a rink? Bowling rink of the Workingmen's Club, but on closer inspection, I see it is a carpet.
Is that the traditional post-race fare, a steak at the Workingmen's Club?
I think it's going to become that, Ian. This is my first ever visit to Bathurst, but I like the pulling off the Mitchell Freeway and just coming in here to Lithgow, where I've never been before, but as you can probably guess, I don't know if you've been to Bathurst yourself, but it is the proverbial parking lot as you attempt to leave Bathurst. 55,000-56,000 people not moving as quickly as those V8 supercars, which I noted approached 300 kilometres an hour as they came down off
the
mountain there.
Good Lord. Goodness me.
But
What was your posse? You've described your posse there at the Working Man's Club beautifully. It's a great spot to prop and wait for the traffic to clear. But where was your position on the track at Mount Panorama?
If you were watching, Jeff, you would have seen at the start they come down the straight and then they immediately turn. And where they turn, straight across there, are two covered grandstands. And we were in one of those. But we didn't spend too much time in our reserved seats today, despite the, close to $600 collective dollars that I paid to reserve them, because we did it all, fellas. We went to the Motorsport Museum, which is well worth a visit, even if, like me, you are completely impassive in the face of motorsport. And they unveiled there a new statue to Brocky a couple of days ago. We did that.
With him standing on the roof of the car.
That's right, waving what looked like some sort of scepter, but I guess it's the Bathurst trophy, which we didn't stick around.
It looked like the Olympic torch from the 56 Melbourne Games.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And they've got the FJ Holdens outside the museum, which my son had never seen, but which was the first car we owned in Australia, so that was a thrill. Mm-hmm. And we hung around in the paddock for the autographs. And believe it or not, one of them was Robert Dippier Domenico.
And who was he driving for?
Well, he was there among the VIP guests, mm-hmm. and I pushed Alistair over to get his autograph, and various people asked me who that was, mm. which proves we're in New South Wales.
Now, hang on, they have the King of the Mountain, and that gets awarded. Is there some sort of Bathurst equivalent of the Norm Smith Medal?
For the best on the day?
Yeah, or the best car, or the best something that didn't win the flag.
Look, I think they just go the straight 1, 2, 3. I don't know if they chop it up any finer than that. Mm. But then we also got Mark Scaife's autograph. He'd just come out of the car about an hour from the end of the race, and boy, they really sweat in those cars, don't they? He was red in the face and keen to get to the truck where they cool down, but I pushed Alistair forward and he handed Mark Scaife the pen, mm-hmm. you know, the marker pen, and Scaife just kept walking and Alistair was frozen there, nervously, and I said, you got to keep walking with him, son, you got to keep walking with him, so he caught up to him and got the autograph, so that was great.
And got the pen back.
Yeah.
Scaife's hooked that many pens that way, Imre, you've got no idea.
Look, these guys are, with 10-year-old boys, these guys are more popular than footballers. They they queue for hours afterwards to get the winning driver's autographs. But when we first got into this a year or so ago, I managed to get us into the media room using my media connections, and Alistair was in pole position, no pun intended, when the three winning drivers came in for the media conference. And Scaife walks in, and I push Alistair forward, and Scaife's a bit surprised to find it. A 10-year-old boy has collared him even in the media room, but he signs the jumper. And then Todd Kelly comes in, and I push Alistair forward, and Todd Kelly's equally gracious, stops on his way to the media conference and signs the shirt. And then Jamie Wincup walks in, and I push Alistair forward, and he goes, no, Dad, no. And the whole room freezes. Wincup freezes, and everybody looks at me, and I go, come on, Alistair, get his autograph. And Alistair turns to me, and a huge stage whisper goes, no, Dad, he's a Ford driver.
Did the room crack up?
Oh, absolutely. And the Ford Holden thing is still going strong among the little boys.
I hope that Jamie Wincup cracked up as well.
That's right, yeah. And then the other thing we did in the time we had today was to go up onto the hill. Now, that's something.
Mm, yeah.
That is really something. I had no idea. The sort of compounds of mates. And they've got the TVs going, and some of them have a kind of mock living room set up, and they've got these generators. Have you ever seen this? The petrol-driven generators, which they kind of leave on the other side of the hill, and then they run extension cords over the mound, and with those generators, they run their TVs and their
fridges.
Fridges. It's just amazing. Mm. Just amazing. Mm.
Yes, the compound on the hill, I think, is a bit like an area at the Northport Oval in the VFA where they never used to show the tent that the painters and dockers were running. I think it's a bit like that. The TV camera doesn't show us the compounds on the mountain.
I was totally amazed at the infrastructure that they brought to their weekend's entertainment. They obviously do it year after year after year, and
well behaved, I'm guessing.
Out of it. But bit of a disappointing day for the Holdens, and that brought a lot of 90% of the little boys seem to have the red shirts.
Well, on that subject, Imre, how does the crowd split up? Are they fairly 50-50 for Holden and Ford?
Look, I don't think so, champs. I reckon it used to be like that, but you see a lot more red, and particularly among the little boys. I don't know why, but I would say the little boys now behind Ford would be, you know, probably 20%.
So if if you're a Ford follower, you're backing the underdog.
No, I've got to go with my own little boy, who was the only reason I was there, and he's absolutely glued on Holden.
Mm. Well, the interesting thing is, isn't it, that they go cars first and drivers second, because Craig Lowndes has been backwards and forwards between the manufacturers, hasn't he?
That's true, although, again, you're stretching my knowledge of the sport.
yes, we're going to start asking you know, what sort of trades are coming up and what's going to happen in the driver draft.
That's right, yeah, or what kind of brake pads they were using, yeah. But look, very loud, very noisy, but also a policeman every 2 feet. Oh. I have never seen a police presence like this.
Why?
Did you say?
Yeah,
They seem to be expecting some sort of trouble, but I've never been to a more, you know, good-natured or aggro-free event. I mean, there is immense alcohol intake, as you know, and everybody who goes up onto the hill is breathalyzed. Mm. And I hadn't been breathalyzed in 10 years, but we were breathalyzed driving into Bathurst yesterday. Mm. And they also have drug sniffer dogs on the buses that take you up there to the to the top of the mountain. So, look, huge police presence, but. You know, whether it was that or whatever, it was just a very, very friendly, cheerful event.
I think there's only one greater police presence, and that's at Port Adelaide home games at Footy Park. Someone rang Talkback Radio complaining, saying that's why the crowds are down for Port games. There are too many police.
Now, Imre, on the subject of intoxication, what's the... I'm tipping the chief poison would be either bourbon or beer. I don't suppose much wine would be sold at Bathurst.
No, there's not much wine sold. It's the two beverages that seem to be purchasable were something called Gold 4X, which I didn't trouble the scorers on that one. And there was also plenty of the Jim Beam and some of the other bourbons and some of the rums and vodkas. I didn't actually try any of those either, but I did cause a bit of a ruckus at the coffee tent when I ordered a skinny latte. I could almost hear those dueling banjos starting in the background.
What sort of coffees were they offering?
What's that?
What sort of coffees were they offering?
Well, Irish coffee.
They had the Victoria caravan going there, and people start pretty early, and the coffees were pretty popular. But I think the skinny latte. Was a bridge too far.
So a focaccia was not to be found?
No focaccia, no quiche, nothing like that, Chance. No.
So that posse you had in the stand, you've actually got the cars coming towards you along the straight before they turn left to go up Mountain Straight.
Towards us as they turn left to go up the mountain.
It's a pretty exciting corner, that.
It is an exciting corner. The real excitement seems to be up the top there, and that's partly fuelled by the nature of the culture of the crowd up there. Mm. But look, I don't know. It was good to be, you would have noticed if you saw any of it, absolutely gorgeous, warm, sunny day, but what the grandstand had was a bit of shelter from the sun. I wouldn't have wanted to sit in the sun all day.
At one stage I heard them saying that the temperature was 22 degrees, the track temperature was 33, and in-car was 38. That's why Scafie was looking red in the face.
Very red in the face, and look, my friend Tim Blair, who's a bit of an expert on these things and... rights cards for various organs informs me that these guys have tremendous fitness, even compared to the Dipier Domenicos of the world, although he did not look that fit. I don't know what happened. What was that diet he was on? I think he's fallen off that wagon. But they're very fit, and apparently they lose kilograms in the course of a race like that. But 6.5 hours, and when you see them go past almost nose to tail, it's just incredible to think about the concentration and the fitness that it would take.
And like every other sport, it looks so much faster than it does on the telly, doesn't it?
Absolutely, and considerably noisier, I should add, but not as noisy as that RAAF fighter jet that flew over in the morning, and that was absolutely ear-splitting.
You presume that they don't have aircon because it adds extra weight to the vehicle. You imagine with today's technology they could put some sort of light aircon in?
Just wind the window down.
Or maybe give them those ice vests that footy players don when they come off on a hot day.
Now, in your travelling around the track and environs, was there any opportunity to do a pit lane walk for the public?
Look, we had what was called paddock access, which takes you down the back of the pit lane, so you can gaze through the individual team garages and... you can see a bit of the pit action on the other side of that, but they're very restrictive about getting into the actual pit lane itself. But one of the beauties of the corporate boxes and the media rooms is that they have these balconies overlooking the pit lanes. Mm. So I have seen that at Eastern Creek, and, well, that's a sight too, isn't it? I mean, the time it takes them to change four tyres and refuel and do whatever else they do.
In a blink.
In a blink. It's just amazing.
And just quickly, I suppose, a very important question right back at the start of the day. Who had the honour of singing the Australian national anthem on the grid?
Look, that's when I was ordering the skinny latte, but I didn't. I don't know if they had a you're probably right. They probably did have a designated singer. To me, it just sounded like a chanting of the national anthem. But unfortunately, I missed that one, Ian.
Yes, it's usually someone either from Tamworth or one of the talent programs on the telly.
Yeah, but I tell you what, another thing that there is no lack of are extremely scantily clad blonde women. And they dance and they gyrate and they pose in photos with you. I didn't take them up on it, but there seem to be an endless number of men who get their mates to photograph them with two attractive, scantily clad blonde women hanging off their shoulders and look incredibly pleased about themselves. It's just another V8 thing.
Alistair will cherish that photo for a long time, Imre.
Absolutely,
mate. Oh, dear. Well, thanks for joining us, Imre. All the best.
Good to talk to you, boys.
You'll be back next year?
Look, we might do. What I'm already looking forward to is, you may have heard, they're going to have a road race at Homebush, the V8. So, that was announced by the state government last week. So I tell you what, that's a bit less of a slog from where we are than Bathurst.
And one other thing, Imre, you didn't track down the true star of Bathurst, did you? And that's Will Hagen of the ABC?
I didn't get any media accreditation for this one, champ, so we were in with the hoi polloi and I didn't get to meet him.
Enjoy that steak you're eating there at the Lithgow Leagues Club. And, to really get into the whole Lithgow Leagues Club steak and chips thing, I think you should wash it down with a Risha's DA.
Yeah, that's right, and Alistair's militating for the jelly and ice cream.
This hour with the Could Have Been Champions on ABC Radio, we have discussed in depth Woodstock, Mount Panorama.
Well, there you go.
What's left? What could come next, Billy?
A Magic Moments. And heaven knows where we'll go here. But I will refer to my left, your right. And Greg Champion is always a good first port of call when we're talking Magic Moments, isn't it?
It's a very small bag of tricks this evening, Billy.
Really?
It's tiny. I heard the ABC newsreader say at 6 o'clock the word statistics.
Statistics,
and that's come
from Stradbroke Island.
From no finer source than an ABC newsreader.
And you know what?
And he knew he'd said it when he said it.
It should be statistics.
I could feel him just hesitate slightly over it as if he went, damn. That got away.
That one
from
got
me.
Through.
But here's one, just one from the newspaper. In fact, it was a radio report.
Is it fingers on the buzzer?
It's a finger on the buzzer, so get ready.
Yep.
It won't take you, it won't be too hard. The Australian share market has fallen 8%, and the blank Australian dollar has fallen to 66 cents. Well, you need the sense of, if I need to give clues. Yes.
Ailing?
Well, you're in the right direction. Now get a bit more, journalistic. What's more than ailing,
Dying?
Beleaguered?
Yes, beleaguered. And if it hadn't been beleaguered, it would have been embattled.
Yeah.
Although you don't really have an embattled dollar.
I think you embattled earlier, then you beleaguered.
Right. Mm-hmm. So you got it.
I think you had troubled, embattled, beleaguered.
That beleaguered. And, in fact, is beleaguered ever used except in reference to a government or a politician?
Someone usually is.
Or a dollar.
Yeah, under the pump.
In other words, but it's not one you'd usually use in general conversation. Gee, I feel really beleaguered today.
Yeah. Very good, champion.
That is all.
Very good. Covey.
Oh, gee, you've got me on the hop there. Now, look, I thought I might, whilst we're... It is magic, actually, to receive mail on this program, as you do. And a long-time mailer from long ago, a long-ago mailer, has re-entered the fray. Dr. Jack.
I remember Dr.
Jack from Brisbane.
Yeah.
And he has written after a very long time, it just put me in mind of this, that he has, I think, taken a lead from you, Champy, and indeed probably from Stanley... Statistician who does statistics at Stradbroke Island. And
have you been to the chemist?
Why is that?
Well, with Dr. Jack, he sends a letter and you take it to the chemist and get it filled and then you read it on the show.
Are you sure he really is a doctor?
Sorry, it's got doctor up here.
But look at the letter.
I know, it's legible.
You can read the writing.
I know, it's very odd. And he has taken a leaf, just like you do and Stan in particular, because he started writing things down in a book.
Right.
And he says he loves mangled English and horse racing.
Okay.
And they are, apparently are two beautiful intersecting circles, if ever there were two. And he is now in total self-delusion. I've been noting future winners in the front of a spirally bound book.
Good.
Just like you have a little book with the spiral bound in it.
Yeah.
But apart from writing down the potential future winners, he's been writing down examples of mangled English.
Okay.
Very good.
Give it to us.
And he sent a few in the spirit of the season given it is a racing season. He's actually got about a dozen here. Number one is, to his guns he has a great heart and stuck on good.
Which, on thinking about it, means... his guns...
The horse persevered.
I think he meant the horse has a great heart and he's...
Stuck on good.
Stuck to his guns.
He didn't give up.
No, it's mangled.
He persevered. The horse persevered. Three words.
He added another chink to his armour the other day.
There's going to be a Guru Bob in that.
dear. He's quoting someone else, I think, or various racing experts he's heard, particularly on the Celestial. Are you with me? I thought he handled himself with great professionalism and sincerity.
That's very racing.
Sincerity.
Oh, sincerity. talking about a particular horse. She's tough, she's fit, she's residual.
Residual. Oh, we got this is getting into real estate.
No, he's done a very good job.
English.
Sincerity. It's going to be hard to top. Keep him coming.
Righto. He's a striker of the eye.
Oh, okay. I think beating sincerity is adding a chink to your armour.
He's a striker of the eye.
Yeah. You've nailed it on the head, Ollie. Must have been talking to Damien. He's a progressive sort of horse.
That's nice, as opposed to a regressive one.
I'll be taking these with me in future weeks to use. He let down beautifully under his own steam and formulated his feature.
I have no idea.
That's the best. Yeah. That is the best.
Hey,
let down beautifully under his own steam and formulated his feature.
Dr. Jack, you said you love mangled English and horse racing, and they do intersect.
That is the best of the lot.
Dr. Jack, write a book.
That's the best.
There's a couple to come. Oh. It was devastating when he got beaten in the slipper, but such is such.
That's the clubhouse leader.
We've got to get on to this, whoever's doing these, because they are magnificent.
I think Ben Cousins has to go back to the tattoo shop.
I tell you, it's such is such. I think he'll be... Someone asked about a particular horse. I think he'll be a real contessa for the Melbourne Cup. I'm not doubting Dr. Jack for one moment. He's heard it. And he says his fave is, it was too early in the race for me to expose myself. There you go. So thank you, Dr. Jack.
Yeah, good on you, Jack.
It is magic to know we are moving into the season. And
I'm excited already.
I had a look at the Gurfield Guineas yesterday.
Bit of a turn-up.
And not in the Guineas, because who begot you? Duly saluted by three lengths and... it's the very same race this time last year that Weekend Hustler announced itself. Exposed itself on the feature circuit.
On a day of beaten favourites.
Yeah.
The feature race, the Guineas,
was
the odd one out.
Yeah.
It eased down to make its feature.
So I'll be interested. Exactly right.
Formulated.
In fact, I don't know. That's right. They may well have asked the connections of what's just ahead for who begot you.
Mm.
Their response may or may not have been, this is another one from the list, we've got a master plan and we've got everything permeant.
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 Well, that's a relief.
Yeah. Anyway, I've got to wait. So, who begun you? I've got to say yesterday, Richard, to his guns, he has a great heart and stuck on good.
And not only that, he's added another chink to his armour.
Yeah.
Because we'll be doing it all again on Wednesday for the Gorefield 1000
games. Yes, that's right. Well, let's just keep an eye to see whether they can nail it on the head again. So there you go. So the racing's in full swing and there's plenty of that going around. Thank you, Dr. Jack. It was magic.
That's terrific. Thanks.
I've been seeing a lot of horses in my neck of the woods being taken down to the water.
Practicing.
In the sand.
Yeah. Practicing for the big one. Yes. Or ones.
Mm. Well, or just refreshing after a training sesh, I would have thought. But yes, around this time of the year, you see more and more horse floats parked in the bays of the local beaches.
I heard a chap talk actually on Friday on the history of the Melbourne Gap. Fascinating about the history of it. Mm. And because there's been great mystery for more than half a century about what became of the Farlap Cup from 1930.
Mm-hmm.
And every other cup can be accounted for. There's a widespread view that it may well have been melted down at some stage because it was during the Depression and the connections, you know.
Didn't it resurface and there was some doubt as to its authenticity?
Correct. A chap came into a car yard. It's interesting, having just talked to him, Raid, about the great race at Mount Panorama, a chap came into a car yard in Queensland and traded in a Melbourne Cup for a Commodore.
That's where you'd expect to find a car, a Melbourne Cup.
Yeah, exactly. And then the chap claimed it was the Farlap Cup.
Mm.
VRC officials and historians did a lot of work on it. And eventually, this was part of the address last Friday, it was determined that somewhere along the line, one of those classic Queensland Art Union raffles, you know, where they usually give a house, a boat, you know, and a car, also one of the consolations included a Melbourne Cup.
Okay.
And so
Remembered this.
Yeah. So
from being stuffed in their letterbox in 1971.
So you won a car, a house, and a replica
and a Melbourne Cup.
And they had a look at it, and it was pretty much close to the thing, but not consistent with the size and the weight and all the rest of it. There was then a theory that that the 1930 cup was, they rubbed Farlap off it and presented it in 1953.
Used it again.
Which was presented to Wodella.
And why did they have to do that?
Austerity, I believe.
Yeah, I think it might have been. Mm. It was something like that. So they had a spare one in the cupboard, and so rather than go and buy one, they just got that out.
And that's what became of the missing Farlap one.
Yeah, and then subsequent to that, in 1980, when Belldale Ball won, the cup was even heavier than all the others, right? And they have a theory now that it might actually be the Farlap became the Wodella, became the Belldale Ball.
So the Wodella is missing as well.
I think they're one and the same.
One and the same.
Has it not surfaced at Lady Susan Sangster's residence?
Well, Belldale Ball, of course, was
Robert Sangster's
horse.
So she's got the one. She's got the Belldale one.
And they're thinking that's the
it could be the other two. Mm.
So that one has now been presented three times in a row.
Yes, that would have been presented in 30, 53 and 80.
What about this one that's turned up that's now sitting in a car yard in Queensland?
I imagine the car dealer's still got it on his mantelpiece.
Or maybe he's got it out on the lot next to a ute and a station wagon with a giant price stuck to it.
He's got a dressmaker's mannequin holding it with a bad wig on. And
$4.99.
Because it would make it interesting that if, in fact, the original theory that they'd melted the 1930 cup down was, in fact, true. Why was it that only once in the history of the cup had someone fallen on such hard times that they melted? You thought there's a chance that one or two others might have been melted down.
But also, surely melted down, it wouldn't be worth as much, you would think.
No, but I suppose if they were straightened times.
If you're on your uppers.
It's worth something anyway. Anyway, it was fascinating to hear all that, and no doubt we'll all get another run very shortly when the gap
goes
around.
Before we know it, it'll be going around and another one will be presented.
That fellow who's that car dealer who's got the Melbourne Cup, the replica one, he should take it down to the Gold Coast, see if he can swap it for a Falcon.
I've never ever went in the Art Union.
No.
I looked at it.
Do you lament the fact you didn't now?
And you think, well, someone must have won this. But I remember looking and thinking, well, what would I do with a house on a canal at the Gold Coast? I didn't really want one. But what mystified me more than anything was, what is an art union.
Yeah.
How do you join? Yeah. And where, and where's the art?
Well, the painters and dockers. Yeah. And sculptors. You got a magic machine.
Maybe
to share,
they were all at Mount Panorama. Yeah, actually, Ian witnessed this this week. Mm. We have a young friend of ours. He's about three. And he had a nice bouncy rubber ball, and he was throwing it at Ian and I one afternoon this week, and we were having a fun game, throwing the ball backwards and forwards. Now, listeners can't make this out, but I'm putting my glasses on now. I have glasses that I have a string.
Mm. Like so an old
I wear them around my neck, so like when I take them off my
head, lose them.
I don't lose them. They're hanging down here on the string. And I think this young man has encountered other people of perhaps a similar age and demographic to me who also has glasses like this. And after he'd been playing ball with me for a little while, he said, "Are you the doctor?" And I somehow or other I tweeted, I think it was the glasses that was cueing him in that perhaps I had some connection to the medical profession. Mm. And I said, "Oh, you like my glasses too?" He goes, yeah. "Are you the doctor?" I said, no, I'm not. Have you seen a doctor before with these?" And we established that, yes, he had. And I said, "No, I'm not the doctor. I'm just playing ball with you here." To which then he absolutely floored me with the follow-up question. Mm-hmm. Which I still cannot. I couldn't answer him then. I was stumped, floored by a three-year-old, and several days have elapsed since, and I still cannot answer this question. It's thrown me back into an existential void. Mm. When I made it clear to him I was not the doctor, he just looked me in the eye and said, "Well, who you are?"
A good philosophical question, young man. Actually, there is a bit of Michael Craig about Richo with the glasses around the neck there.
He was the doctor on...
GP.
GP, of
correct.
Course.
Don't worry about that.
Can they replay that on ABC 2?
Can they? I'm betting you they already have. See, you love your ABC 1, ABC 2. How up with it are you?
Very much so. Last week we played a piece of comedy on our Saturday night program for those who haven't yet caught up to the Kudabeen's latest antics. We're now broadcasting on a Saturday evening. The Saturday soiree goes to air on the eastern side of the country from 7 p.m. until 10. It's taken at different times elsewhere. And each week we feature a comedy track. And the first week we broadcast on a Saturday, we played Wayne and Schuster's Rinse the Blood Off My Toga, and that caused an avalanche or a landslide of response, all of it favourable. So we thought for our Sunday listeners, who hadn't caught our Saturday broadcast, we'd replay the track for your interest.
Rinse the blood off my toga. This play is presented with apologies to William Shakespeare and Sir Francis Bacon, just in case. Rome, 44 BC.
My name is Flavius Maximus. I'm a private Roman eye. My license number is IXIVLLCCDIXMB. Also comes in handy as an eye chart. Tonight I'm going to tell you about the Julius Caesar caper. It all began during the Ides of March. I was in my office. I just sent another criminal to jail. Suetonius the Gladiator. He'd been fixing fights at the Colosseum. Had a crooked lion that kept taking a dive. Anyways, I was sitting there. My secretary walked in.
Morning, Flavius. Here's the mail.
Easy with those marble postcards. Break my table. Anything else, baby?
Yeah, there's somebody outside to see you. Seems awful excited about something.
Okay, show him in, doll.
Would you come in, sir?
Thank you, miss. You, Flavius Maximus, private Roman eye?
Yeah, what's on your mind?
Just a minute. Are we alone?
Yeah, we're alone.
Are you sure we're alone?
Yeah, I'm sure we're alone.
Are you positive we're alone?
I'm positive we're alone.
Well, who's that standing beside you?
That's you.
I know, but can I be trusted?
I could see I was dealing with no ordinary man. This guy was a nut. A All right, what's on your mind?
Flavius Maximus, a terrible thing has happened. It's the greatest crime in the history of Rome.
All right, give it to me straight. What's up?
Julius Caesar has been murdered.
Julius Caesar murdered. I couldn't believe my ears. Big Julie was dead.
Yeah, he was killed just 20 minutes ago. Happened in the Senate. He was stabbed.
Stabbed?
Yeah, they got him right in the rotunda.
Oh, that's a painful spot. I had a splinter there once. Yeah. Oh, those marble splinters, you know.
Boy, I tell you, all of Rome is in an uproar, and I came to you because you are the top private eye in Rome. You've got to find the killer.
Well, I'll try.
Oh, you can do it. After all, you're the guy who got Nero. You sent him up on that arson rap.
Nero, the whole town was sure burned up about him, eh? You get it? Hold on. Holy Jupiter.
Oh, look, what do you say, Flavius? Will you take the case?
Just a minute, Pally. I like to know who I'm working for. Just who are you?
I'm a senator. I was Caesar's best friend. The name is Brutus.
Brutus, eh? All right, Brutus, you got yourself a boy. I'll take the case. My fee is 125 drachmas a day. Payable in advance.
Okay, here you are.
You're one short.
Hey, you got a good ear.
When it comes to money, perfect pitch. Let's go, eh?
All right, let's go.
We went outside, flagged a passing chariot, and made our way down the Via Appia. The streets were crowded with the usual people, slaves, legionaries, patricians, and little men who came out of doorways and sold you postcards from Gaul. Before long, we found ourselves at the Senate.
Well, Flavius, this is where it happened. This is where Big Julie got knocked up.
Yeah, now where's the corpus delicti?
The what?
Corpus delicti. What's the matter? Don't you understand plain Latin? The body.
Oh, the stiff.
Yeah.
Oh, he's laying right over there.
Wow-wee. 8 daggers in him.
Yeah, what do you think?
If he were alive today, he'd be a pretty sick boy. He's really fixed for blades, eh?
Now, come on, Flavius. You gotta solve this crime.
All right. Fill me in on the setup here. Now, who are those guys over there?
They were all here when it happened. That's Publius. That's Casca. There's Trebonius.
I see. Who's that guy over there with the lean and hungry look on his kisser?
That's Cassius.
Yeah? Looks like a loser from the Colosseum. Yeah. Well, who do you think is the likeliest suspect?
That fella next to him.
Wait a minute, that's you.
I know, but can I be trusted?
I could see I was dealing with no ordinary case. This was a mental case. Wait a minute, who's the dame?
Well, that's Caesar's wife. Her name is Calpurnia.
Yeah, well, she's a suspect.
Sure.
Just a minute. Pardon me, Mrs. Caesar?
Yes?
Flavius Maximus, Private Roman Eye. I'd like to ask you a few questions. What do you know about this?
I told him, Julie, don't go. What? Julie, don't go, I told him. No, he wouldn't listen.
Now, look,
to
Mrs.
me.
Caesar,
I told him once, I told him 1,000 times, Julie, don't go.
Now, please, don't upset yourself.
I begged him, don't go. I told him, Julie, don't go. I said, it's the Ides of March. Beware already.
Yeah.
But would he listen to his
All
wife?
Right, take
no.
It. Sergeant, would you take Mrs. Caesar home, please?
Come along, ma'am, come along.
I told him, Julie, don't go.
I don't blame him for going. All right, you senators, you can go too, but don't leave town.
Well, what do you think?
I don't know. Not an angle anywhere, not a clue.
Well, cheer up, Flavius. After all, Rome wasn't built in a day.
Hey, what was that?
I said Rome wasn't built in a day.
Hey, that's very good. Rome wasn't built in a day. That's very good.
You like it?
Yeah.
It's yours.
Thanks. Well, let's reconstruct the crime. Now, Caesar was over here.
Right
at,
over here. Yeah.
Shh.
What's the matter?
Somebody behind that pillar.
Oh.
I'll go get him. Shh.
Right.
All right, buddy. Stop it.
All right, Buster. What are you doing hanging around here?
Well, why shouldn't I? I'm Mark Antony.
Mark Antony?
Yeah, I just made a speech over the body of Caesar. I said, friends, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears.
Yeah? What do you got in that sack?
Ears.
You get out of here.
Well, wait a minute. Don't you want to know who bumped off Julius Caesar?
Yeah. You know who did it? Not with it. What's his name?
His name is...
It's a funny name. Must be Greek.
No, look. He's dead.
What a confusing case. All I got for clues is two dead bodies and a sack full of ears.
Now, look, Flavius, I'm paying you 100 drachmas a day.
125 drachmas.
All right, you got a good ear.
I got a sack full of good ears.
Now, look, look. Let's have some action here, eh?
All right, don't get your toga in a knot. Listen, I got a pal.
Yeah?
Claudius. Yeah. Runs a bar on the Via Flaminia. He should have a few answers for me.
Hey, that's the idea. Get out among the people. Ask questions. After all, when in Rome, do as the Romans do.
What was that one? What was that one?
I said, when in Rome, do as the Romans do.
Oh, that's very good. When in Rome, do as the Romans do. Very good.
You like it?
Yeah.
It's yours.
Thanks. I'll see you later.
All right.
Claudius's Bar and Grill is a hangout where I get all the answers. It's just a small place with a few tables and a guy in the corner playing a cool reed pipe.
Hiya, Flav.
Hi, Claude. What's new?
Nothing much. What are you drinking?
Give me a Martinez.
You mean martini.
If I want two, I'll ask for them. Look, I'm working on this Julius Caesar kill. You know anything?
Try that dame over there.
Yeah?
Yeah.
All right, sister, start talking.
I told him, Julie, don't go. Julie, don't
go. Out!
Hey, look, Flavius, I think I know the guy you're looking for.
You mean Mr. Big?
Yeah. His name is...
Now, that's an interesting name. You got a chisel? I'd like to write it down. Claudius? Claudius! I would never get any more conversation from him. He was dead. This was shaping up bigger than I thought. Suddenly I looked up and there was Brutus.
Hello, Flavius.
Brutus, what are you doing here?
Hey, I was looking for you. Hey, who's that on the floor?
Claudius, the bartender.
Hey, that's a funny place for him to carry a knife in his back.
He's dead. He was stabbed. Through the portico.
Hey, that's even more painful than the rotunda.
Yeah.
Well, have you come up with any answers? Who killed Julius Caesar?
I started to think, and slowly the pieces fell into place. Brutus was the only man around when all those guys got killed. Caesar, Antony, the bartender, Brutus was always there. Things were beginning to add up. I put two and two together, and it came out IV. It was time to make my move.
Well, have you come up with any answers? Who killed Julius Caesar?
Only one guy could have done it.
Yeah? Who?
Let's not play games, Brutus, or should I say Mr. Big?
What are you getting at?
If the sandal fits, wear it. You knocked off Big Julie.
You're out of your head. I hired you to find the killer.
Pretty smart, but not smart enough. Now, all right, are you going to talk? Or do I have to call in a couple of centurions to lean on you?
All right, that's what I did it. I admit it. I knocked off Big Julie, and I'd do it again.
That's all I want to know. I'm sending you up to Tiber for a long stretch. Come on, I'll call a chariot. We'll go downtown.
Don't move unless you want a dagger and a toga.
What?
I'm getting out of here. Don't try to stop me.
He had the drop on me, and I couldn't stop him, but I knew where he was heading. For the scene of the crime, the Senate. And 15 minutes later, I pulled up in my chariot. Tiberius? Tiberius, hand me that ram's horn.
Here you are, Flav.
All right, Brutus. This is Flavius Maximus. I know you're in there. Come on out.
Come and get me. I've got you out in Flatfoot.
You haven't got a chance, Brutus. I've got the Senate surrounded with a stakeout. Now throw your sword down. Come on out with your hands up.
Come and get me.
Get smart, Brutus. We can smoke you out. We'll throw incense. We'll throw in an onion on a spear.
I don't care what you do.
All right, you asked for it. Give it to him, Tiberius.
Brutus, one false move and I'll fill you full of bronze.
All right. All right, you got me, Shamus. but I'll be back.
No, no, you won't. This isn't a series.
What?
It's just one little LP.
Don't worry. I'll be back. Just remember one thing. All roads lead to Rome.
Come on, you. Hey, wait. Bring him back.
What?
Wait, now, that one was a dandy.
What?
All roads lead to Rome. Oh. That's the best, you know that?
You like it?
Yeah.
Well, you can't have it.
Oh, get out.
Good work, Flavius. All Rome salutes you.
Hail Flavius!
Hail Flavius!
Thanks, boys. And now, if you'll excuse me, I got a date with a doll. Okay, baby, I'm ready. Now, you're sure your husband doesn't object?
Well, frankly, I don't care. I told him, Julie, don't go.
The timeless comedy there of Johnny Wayne and Frank Schuster from Ontario, Canada, Rinse the Blood Off My Toga, first broadcast on the CBC in 1954, and they chose that piece to debut on the Ed Sullivan Show in 1958. And as you said, Richo, no matter how many times you hear it, it's still funny.
You can't help yourself laughing. And 1954, that is just astonishing.
And they do the whole routine on the Ed Sullivan Show?
Yeah.
That just goes to show how generous Ed was. He didn't come on and just do a 2.5-minute pop song.
No.
He did a 12-minute comedy sketch.
But, you know, would anybody come on a show, you know, like Ed Sullivan's Show and do something like that today? What's happened to Variety?
Oh, I'm with you
100%. Oh, they haven't heard about Variety.
No. I'll have a Martinez. Mm. Don't you mean a martini? If I wanted two,
I'd ask for it.
Intellectual humour.
Mm. Mm.
For those who know the man.
Oh, hello, where'd that come from?
Through the double glass. It's time to share some mail. I have something here that was sent from a good correspondent, Mark Whitehead, in East Osaka. Mark says, "Evening, gents. Listening to news radio on Tuesday, keeping up with the news, ets, was very happy to hear the following enlightening exchange. The topic was a new early warning weather system. Interviewer: so is there any other system similar to this anywhere in the world? Interviewee: no, there isn't. That's one of the things that makes it unique."
Good point.
There you go.
Now, we got this terrific message from Mark during the week. Mark likes our segment called Magic Moments. He's got two of his own. It's good when a correspondent gives us two beauties. I laughed out loud when I read these. Thanks again, Mark. Going back in time to the early days of the mobile phone, remember what they were like?
Mm.
And how they weren't...
They were bricks.
They weren't like these little stylish things that people have nowadays. A friend of Mark's woke up one morning realising he'd slept in and would be late. Just jumped up, pulled on the work clothes, grabbed his stuff, jumped in the car and tore off. Once he's underway, he's thinking, OK, I'll now ring and let them know that I'm going to be late. Reaches for the mobile phone, had the video remote control in his hand.
Yep, been done. Yeah. Been done before, yes.
Wouldn't happen nowadays.
I remember our friend June Smythe doing the same thing.
You wouldn't make that mistake with today's handheld devices. No. Now, something that will not go away in the Coulda Beans world is the Leyland P76. Mm. Whenever we mention it, if Greg sings the song, people constantly want to write to us about it. It's just one of those things that have captured people's imaginations. And one of the many attributes of the P76 that was designed into it when it was designed tough for Aussie conditions was, remember the boot, and boots on the P76 style became very popular afterwards, having the high bobtail boot with a lot of room in it. They were ahead of their time. But what was it? Do you remember, champs? It was
44 gallon drum.
Correct.
Or a bale of hay.
Yeah. Then it was in the advertising material and the specs and everything being built tough for Aussie conditions that the P76 had a boot in which you could fit a 44 gallon drum. Well, one of the people at Mark's work way back owned a P76. And the rest of the fellows at work thought they would test the theory out. So, without his knowledge, they put an empty 44-gallon drum in the boot of the car. Sure enough, it fit in okay.
After a couple of days, one of the guys asked him, how's it going? How's the car going? And he said, funny you should mention that. My wife's been complaining that the car makes a funny noise every time she applies the brakes. Yeah. I'll have a look. I'll be having a look at it this weekend. Sure enough, the wayward 44-gallon drum was rolling around in the boot. Thank you, Mark. Enjoyed both of those.
Well, and clearly there was even more space because the drum had room to roll around.
Not correct? A snug fit by any means. It needed the bale of hay in there just to tamp it up.
To buffer it.
Yeah.
Kev Smythe in the United Arab Emirates.
G'day, Kev.
Yeah. We love our United Arab Emirates listeners, Kev.
Oh, and as I once heard a Minister of the Crown say on the AM program back in about 1979, he was talking about our trade with the United Arab Emigrants.
Kev says that further to our other Middle East listeners, I just want to let you know that as I drive around the world, I podcast Cut of Veins. I want to match the story that you mentioned in another email by telling you that as I go all over the UAE in my Mitsubishi Nativa, because we'd been talking about the folks going around the world in their similar vehicle, I podcast your show to far-flung places like Sila on the Saudi border, Al Ain, Dubai, Ras Al Khaimah, and Fujairah. Your show is playing in my car. So there you go. You're famous in the UAE. Used to listen to you in Wagga. Wagga's a far cry from Dubai.
Fair drive.
Yeah. And Peter Sim has been to Nimbin for a holiday. They went to Byron Bay and they did the day trip to Nimbin. He was wrapped with the name of the Nimbin soccer team, the Headers, but he took a photo of the football team. It says, support the Nimbin. This is a sign at the football ground. Support the Nimbin Demons. Quote, think global, barrack local.
I like good. It.
That's good.
Yep.
Our correspondent of some standing, Rick Morovic, has let us know that we were speaking to the Manly Leagues Club on our debut Saturday night soiree show. We were put on hold and we heard a bloke spruiking a meat tray. He says, while you're on hold at Manly Leagues, the voice of the announcer was that of Grant Goldman. He was big on Adelaide radio in the 70s. Do you remember him, Greg?
This sounds like our friend from the...
BJ the DJ.
From Vondel Mall.
Grant Goldman, big on Adelaide radio. He did drive time on 5AD and used to do the weekend weather. He currently does the announcements at Manly home games and brings his own mics, amps and wiring to the game to G up the crowd. After each game, he packs the equipment back in the boot of the car by himself and drives home. No roadies in Manly.
And he's a pro, Grant.
Very much so. Megan, how can people contact us by email or in the old fash?
Keen to contact the Cuddabeans? Go to abc.net.au/cuddabeans or cuddabeans.com.au and follow the links.
Thank you very much. And thank you for your participation in the program tonight, Megan. Also to young Andy through the double glass as well.
I reckon that fellow, what was his name from Adelaide?
Grant Goldman.
I reckon he packs the gear back into the P76.
Yes, indeed. You could fit a Bill Armstrong studio into that P76. Great to have your company, listeners. Good night, Ian Cover.
Good night, Billy. Good night, Australia.
Good night, Champy.
Yeah, goodbye, everyone.
Good night from me. And good night, Richo.
Good night to you, and thanks for listening.
I look forward to your company next weekend. Don't forget the Saturday soiree.